First, a little bit about our guest. Jeff Bridges is an actor, performer, songwriter, and photographer. He has appeared in over 70 films, including Crazy Heart, True Grit, Iron Man, and The Fabulous Baker Boys. He is also, he shall also be seen in the forthcoming R.I.P.D. and The Seventh Son. He is the co-founder of the End Hunger Network and the national spokesman for Share Our Strengths, No Hungry Kid campaign. Now, Bernie Klassman founded the Zen Community of New York, which later became Zen Peacemakers, an international order of social activists. A longtime Zen teacher, he also founded the Graceland Mandala, a network of for-profits and not-for-profits creating jobs, housing, and programs to support individuals and their families on their path to self-sufficiency. Now joining them on stage is James Shaheen, who will moderate the discussion. Mr. Shaheen is editor and publisher of Tricycle, the Buddhist Review. It's an international quarterly magazine devoted to making Buddhist teachings and practices accessible to the general public. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a warm welcome to all of our guests. Without further ado, let me turn the stage over to James Shaheen.
Well, welcome everybody. It's great to see
such Sit down, please.
It's great to see such a great turnout here. Why don't we start with talking about how the two of you met? I mean, I remember once Bernie called me and said, I'm in dialogue with Jeff Bridges, why don't you speak it? And we did, and it was wildly popular online. But I never really did hear the story of how the two of you met.
John Peterson?
Yeah,
why don't you take it, man?
So we got invited on this day, and we were doing a party for Bernie, this is in Santa Barbara, and Ram Dass. And I thought, oh, yeah, this sounds like a good thing. And so I sat between these two guys, and I leaned over to Ram Dass, and I said, I would like to give you a little head. And he looked at me, and I presented him with a small ceramic head that I enjoyed giving some of my friends. Bernie, I gave Bernie a little head.
My head's called Charlie.
and we just started talking, kind of hit it off, and Bernie and I have remained friends for now, what, 10, 15 years, something like
that. Any thoughts, Bernie?
Well, yeah, I just want to say that I enjoyed meeting Jeff back then, but I first met his wife, and that was cool. I really liked the fact that he was out of town and I could meet his wife.
She didn't give me a little head, did she?
No. Not that I can remember, but...
You do remember, okay.
But you gotta know that I don't remember too much. I learned that's what is meant in Zen when they say you gotta live in the present. It's the people that said that were these old guys. You can't remember anything other than the present. Hopefully you remember that. But she was involved in homelessness back then. She still is. And I had been involved in that kind of work, so we spent some time talking. So that was first. But then I met this guy. I had loved the movie The Dude. And I met this guy, and it's a little funny, you know, people keep asking, is she really like The Dude? When I met him, that's what he was like. So we've had a lot of fun hanging, and I tend to say we hang. As some people would say, we do some study, and we have dealt with some pretty deep stuff. And I think it's been a lot of fun for me to be able to work with someone. And this just came up recently. Somebody asked me this question: to work with somebody where there's no projections on you. where we can be two guys smoking our cigars and talking about life and get to the place of experiencing the interconnectedness of life and the oneness of life, which is expressed in the book by this rug, really puts the room together, you know? What is that? What is that rug that keeps the room together, you know? But anyway, we can talk. And there's no projections, there's no, we're not going anywhere, so it's been fun. All of that happened that night in 5 seconds.
Oh, that's a lot. Okay, you know, Bernie, I know you primarily as a Zen teacher. I've known you for many years. You're very well known, certainly in the Buddhist communities. And so when I first heard about your friendship, I imagined it was a student-teacher relationship. But when I read the book and when I watch you two talking to each other, you seem to be teaching each other. Is that a fair enough assessment? Or is
a student? From my standpoint, yes. And now, I don't think it's just between me and Jeff. From my standpoint, I don't think you can have a relationship where there isn't student-teacher going back and forth. You know, we learn from each other. That's how I feel. Now, if you had asked me the same thing 20 years ago, I would have said, hell no. If you're the student, I'm the teacher, I'm gonna give you the teachings or whatever. I dropped that maybe 15 years ago, 20 years ago, that kind of thinking. But I was trained to think that way. But I don't anymore.
You know, Jeff, in the book, you're sort of half the dude and half Jeff Bridges, and yet you're not the dude. I mean, it's interesting, the entire book hinges on a character that's not really the character. But, you know, you're so closely identified with that character. Does that cause any issues with regard to people's expectations or how people approach you, or are you perfectly comfortable with that?
Yeah, I think it does. You know, that's one of the things about being in the movies, that people know you a little better than they would know just a stranger walking down the street. And they, you know, I was going to say they think they know you, but they quite kind of do, because, you know, in my work, I, you know, show, you know, parts of myself. People, you know, get to see that. Like Bernie, I think maybe about 15 years ago for me too, I kind of made a shift where, you know, maybe 15 or 20 years ago, I would kind of mind having this strong dude persona and people saying, oh, there's the dude, you know, because as an actor, that that kind of limits you in a way, you know. I mean, I remember my father, you know, in Seahawk, he did such a wonderful job playing Mike Nelson that people thought he was Mike Nelson. They thought he was a skin diver that they taught to act. And he pulled that thing off so well, you know. And it was great for our family. You know, we got money and all that. We got moved to a nicer neighborhood and all that. But as I was growing up and watching him, I saw how that kind of hemmed him in, because my father, you know, for those of you who've seen Airplane, you know, he's a comedian, he studied Shakespeare, he replaced Richard Kiley on Broadway, Man of La Mancha, and I could see that when he did play Mike Nelson, well, he got a lot of skydiving scripts, you know, I mean, people thought, oh, that's who he is, and so earlier on in my career, I was concerned about developing a strong persona and went kind of the other way and really went out of my way to not do that and take on many different roles to kind of pleasantly confuse the audience so they could, you know, imagine me as that character and not think of, you know, oh, that's not, you know, he's the dude, you know. That, but now as I'm older, I really don't care that. I've kind of done my thing, and now I'm just, running victory laps,
but you know, one of the things about the Big Lebowski is that it does such a good job of not taking itself too seriously, and yet so many people take it so seriously, so much so that there's a school of dudism. And we got into trouble by making a lighthearted reference about them. They were very upset. They take it to a very serious philosophy. And yet, you know, you're saying that the dude is a Zen master, and maybe that's part tongue-in-cheek and part really true. For instance, when you say the dude's not in, a line that we've heard for the past 25 or so years, you see in that a lot of Zen wisdom. Either one of you, how is that so? What do you mean by that?
You want to go first?
I kind of see it as a partner of the dude abides. Where does he abide? He abides nowhere. And so that's everywhere, and so the dude is not in. That's kind of my take on it.
Yeah, and we talk about this in the book, that there's this famous...
She's coming now.
The dude is coming. We talk about this in the book, that there's this famous guy that lived a long time ago in China, this illiterate guy we named, called the sixth, I was going to say patriarch, we don't like to use that kind of word, right? Sixth ancestor in China, who knew nothing about Buddhism or about Zen, and heard somebody chanting, abiding nowhere, raise the mind of compassion, or raise the mind of enlightenment, or for those that are Buddhists out here, raise the Bodhi mind. And that abiding nowhere is abiding everywhere, right? If you're abiding nowhere, you're abiding everywhere. So what's in between? In between is we're stuck with our attachments to our concepts, to our ideas, and so we're abiding and we create this little house that we call the ego. That's just a small little thing, and that's where we are. If we can let go of that, then we're abiding everywhere. And that's the dude abides. So the dude abiding, when you see the movie and you see this guy going around getting pissed off because somebody pees on his rug, or getting upset, he's reacting to the moment, not to the concept that you might have if you're studying Buddhism and saying, oh, a Buddhist gotta be calm and not get pissed off ever or whatever, not have anxiety, we just gotta be really a stable kind of guy. The dude just reacts to what it is. And that's the dude abiding.
And the dude was rather attached to that rug. That caused a lot of problems.
Not as much until Walter pointed it out.
Yeah.
You needed Walter to say, oh, that rug, man.
Yeah, because Walter pointed out that the rug really ties the room together.
Yeah. So we're guys in good school.
Yeah.
We spent five days, I think, together at your ranch in Montana, and I remember when I first heard that, I thought of weed and white Russians, but I know that's not Bernie's style. What was it like working on this book together?
Cigars.
Yeah, the book ends. I say, at the next to the last line of the book, let's go bowling,
yeah,
Jeff.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jeff says, let's go smoke a cigar. So this book's all about cigars. The two of us love to smoke cigars, and I'll get a phone call from Jeff, and he'll say, "Hey, Bern, let's go burn one." that's what life's about. If you can burn one once in a while.
Give a little pitch to your cigar guy, man. In Brooklyn, Just a little one.
Yeah. I'm hoping.
Or is that going to go buy all? Then you won't have any cigars. So buy them all up.
It's okay. I'm hoping that we can get a good PR piece in Cigar Aficionado, with the cover being Jeff and I smoking cigars. I had about a year or two ago. I had proposed to James. Shaheen, this guy over here at Tricycle, that I would do a centerfold for Tricycle. Being in a bathtub with bubbles and a cigar.
Holding interviews with the students.
Yeah, that would start a new trend in Buddhist magazines.
We're going to have a gate.
So at any rate, about 20 years ago, I was living in Yonkers. That's where we did this work with Grace and Mandela, which President is here. It's a fantastic program that they're really doing wonderful work. And I was living there, and I saw an article in the local newspaper saying that these two brothers came from the Dominican Republic and opened a small cigar store, and it was just a storefront, and they're rolling cigars. It's all that happens there. So I've been buying ever since from them, and even when I've lived far away, Santa Fe, California, Santa Barbara, now Massachusetts, the other end of the world. I get from them, and I'll see people, when people see me, and they see me smoking a cigar, and they say, where do you get it? And I say, well, I import these cigars. And they say, where do you import them? And I say, from Yonkers. And so I took Jeff there, you know, and it's a beautiful little place, and he just asked me to publicize them.
$10 a cigar for about $1.80, something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
And anyway, moving on.
So,
in the book we get to know a few things about you, Jeff, that I wasn't really aware of until we interviewed you a few years back. You do a lot of work in ending hunger among children, is that right?
Yes.
You want to say something about that? Because I know Bernie, I was wondering if that was a point of connection with Bernie, because Bernie does so much work.
Yeah, actually Bernie and I have done some hunger work together, and I started out, close to 30 years ago, working on world hunger, ending world hunger, and helped found an organization called the End Hunger Network. And then, kind of recently, I guess it's been about 2 years now, about 15 years ago, I shifted my focus to hunger here in America because the safety nets that we had in place started to get holes in them, and hunger really started to show its head here. And so I figured we can't be telling other people how to do it. We got to take care of it here first. So I kind of shifted my focus. And a couple of years ago, I got involved with an organization called Share Our Strength and was asked to be the national spokesperson for a campaign called No Kid Hungry. And that was really inspired by our President Obama when he was campaigning the first time around. One of the things he said in his campaign speech was, we're going to end hunger here in America by 2015. And people in the hunger community, that really perked up their ears, and all the hunger organizations met and said, great, we've got a guy who might be the president, and we're going to write the formula on how we can do it. And so they went to work, and they did this kind of instructions for the hunger community and the nation on how we can really do it. And one of the things that came out of that was this fellow Billy Shore, the head of Share Our Strength, came up with this idea of No Kid Hungry. Childhood hunger, hunger is, the larger issue of hunger is really all about poverty. And poverty is quite complex when you get down. How do we solve poverty? This is solving hunger is kind of complex. But feeding a kid really isn't complex. And we found that there are over $1 billion of government funding is available to states that's not being used in programs that are feeding kids, school programs and lunch programs. And so this No Kid Hungry campaign is all about going from state to state and working with governors and bringing business leaders in the communities to the table with hunger organizations and government agencies to find out where the log jam is. Why aren't the kids getting this food that is available to them? and dealing with the, you know, the problem. Because each state is very unique, each one is different. And I think we've got about 18 states on board. I went to both of the conferences, the Democratic Convention and the Republican Convention, and I'm happy to say that, you know, both parties are into ending childhood hunger. And that's kind of what, you know, where we are today.
You were a little bit surprised at the Republican convention, as I read in the book. What was that surprise about?
I was surprised. I was so, you know, you would think, you know, giving a speech, being an actor, you know, that I'd be kind of used to that. But I panicked, man. I really want to do a good job. It's, you know, such an opportunity to not do a good job, you know, not know your stuff and all that. And so, right in the middle of this movie, you know, Billy Shore said, "Hey, we've got a great opportunity for you to speak at these, you know, these conventions." I go, "Oh, man," and play music in the Democratic convention. You can play open for James Taylor. And I said, "Oh, that's great." And I think, "Oh, but I gotta do this speech." And I said, "Well, write me up the thing, and I'll look at it." So he writes me this, you know, thing. It's like 4 pages. This is like a model. I'm looking at it like a monologue for a thing. And I pass it to different advisors. I don't know if I pass it to you, Bern, but I pass it around. So you guys got any ideas? And how does this look? And I worked on it like I was working on a scene in a movie. And it's still, I couldn't get it any smaller. It was about 4 pages. And I memorized the thing. And now it's the Republican convention. And the scene in the movies, you get takes, you know, one or two, however many takes it takes, but not in life, you know, this is it, you're not going to do it. And the idea is I'm going to meet in a room, and in my mind it was about a room like this, you know, with all governors of all the, you know, Republican governors, and I'm going to present this thing, trying to get them to come on board, and the chairman of the Republican governors, his state is on board. He was going to introduce me, and it's going to be at 10 o'clock at night. And I said, "That's an interesting time to have this, you know, meeting. Isn't that, they're going to be kind of tired?" He said, "Oh no, this is a convention. This is the way they do it." And I said, "Okay." And so now they're going to take me this day before. They're going to show me the venue, the thing, and it's a bar. They're all going to be drunk. And then I've got that thing, and then after that I'm going to go across the street to another venue and give a talk to all the No Kid Hungry folks, and there might be some more governors there. And so I went over to look at that venue, and that was a bowling alley with a bar in the bowling alley. So, and then, so now the next day, I say, "I'll do it. I'm just, you know, I'll go wherever you take me, you know." And so now it's the next day, and 10 o'clock comes back. No, they're not ready. 10:30, 11, 12. You know, finally it's about 12:30, and the bar deal is canceled. It's all going to be in the bowling alley now. And I say, "Okay," you know, and the Republican, you know, governor gives his introduction, beautiful one, and I look out of the corner, and he splits, he takes off, and I realize I'm talking, and I'm looking for a governor. There's no governors there. It's all these college girls. And what do? You know, I've memorized my speech, and by God, I'm going to say my governor's speech. So I'm sitting there talking to all these girls, you know, and you're treating them as if they're governors, and it was a total fiasco. But as I pointed out in the book, you know, who knows what, you know, those college girls, you know, you can't put down the college girls, maybe they're going to, you know, save the whole thing right there. But it was completely, you know, not what I expected at all. But it's so funny, and one of the things I'm into Buddhistically or Buddhistly? What do you say?
Either way, Dharma.
Is this Lojong deal, you know, kind of leaning into those challenges. So I found I learned a lot about that. You know, I felt like, a quarterback who's the plays, you're in the huddle and you say, "Okay, you're going to go out for that long ball," you know. And he said, "All right, I have a hip break and a hike." And now the guy goes out and you see he's covered. Well, you don't throw the ball, man, you know. But here I'm at the, you know, that little governor. I'm going to throw the governor ball. You know? So you got to, you know, he said, "Oh, you got to be facile, man, you know." you know, new shit is constantly coming to light.
That's a chapter in the book.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, I was gonna ask Bernie about your piece work, but apparently we're out of time, and I have to announce the sweepstakes winner. There's the Dude and Zen Master signed book sweepstakes winner for the Barnes & Noble event. And the winner is Donald Sisk, who asks this question. How come you didn't bowl in the movie, Dude?
Oh, that's a good question. I'll be talking about it. That's the opening thing of the book. But I'm going to tell you a little story, but I'm first to answer the question. And the question was, how come you don't bowl in the movie? And I don't know.
Dude, yeah.
I don't know why. The poem said, let's not show the dude bowling. They shot me at bowling. But the story, you know, I was concerned. I wanted the dude, because so much of his life was around bowling, I wanted him to, you know, really, you know, get into that. And I bowl a little bit, but nothing like the dude. So the Coen brothers hired this champion bowler. And he was going to teach you know, Buscemi and John Goodman and myself how to bowl. And so we're there, and he's got an assistant there with him, you know, his aide. And I asked him, I said, you know, how do you think the dude would bowl? Is it kind of like a, you know, an Art Carney kind of thing? You know, Ed Norton, you know, you guys know the Honeymooners, you know, he'd be signing anything, you'd pay him. Yeah. Finally, Jackie Gleason would say, sign the paper. You know, I said, could it be like that? And as I'm describing this, I see his aide goes, and the master is kind of looking a little weird. I said, what's going on, guys? He goes, nothing. He can't stop laughing. I said, come on, what is it? And the master says, go on, tell him. And the guy says, no, you tell him. And he finally says, well, he says, it's like, you know, Zen and the art of archery. You know, you've got to get your head in a place before you even cock your hand back to, you know, to throw the ball. You've got to get your head all set, you know, and right, and be one with the whole thing, and see the pins down and everything. And he would get on these big tournaments, and he would be up there, and he would have all these, you know, little twitches and little things that he would do, you know. And the guys on the bench were finally, throw the ball! And it went on for like, you know, 5 minutes. And I said, well, what did you do? You know, he says, well, I had to go to a shrink, and I really, it was a very serious thing, because this guy was a champion. I said, well, how do you do it now? You know, and he says, I just throw the fucking ball.
All right, well, thank you. We're going to take some questions from the audience now.
Ladies and gentlemen, please raise your hands up. We're going to try to get to as many people as possible.
Hi, Mr. Bridges. I'm a really huge fan, and I'm an actor, musician, just like you. The only difference is that you get paid a lot of money to do it. And I want to know, do you have any advice for inspiring actor and musician?
Yeah, do it, man. You know, just do it however you do it. You know, what's so great about today with, you know, just the technical stuff with an iPhone or any kind of the cameras, making a movie is nothing. Go on my site, jeffbridges.com, go to the stuff page, and scroll down till you see a word that says Malukas. And this is a friend of mine, John Goodwin. He's my oldest friend. We knew each other in the fourth grade, and he, like yourself and me, he's a musician. He's an incredible musician, but he's never really gotten, you know, the kind of success that really his talent warrants. But you know, he wrote a song, Crazy Heart, and on my album I sing a lot of his songs. But what's one of the things I admire so much about him? He just does it, man. However you can do it, you just do it. You know, take your camera and make a movie. You know, simple as that. And get your friends and do it. And then, what's great about making movies and different kind of community art forms like music is, or movies, if you put that little bit of that effort in there and do it, and if you're lucky, what happens is that the thing starts to get you. You know, that's as an artist, that's how I find that the biggest challenge, getting hooked, you know. But once you get hooked, forget about it, man. I mean, you're it's like in Amadeus, when the guy's, you know, he's looking at Mozart's things, oh, he's you know, she's taking dictation from God. You know, it just you get swept up in it. So I would advise you to just follow your dream, you know, and just and do it as best you can.
Thank you.
Our next question is all the way to the back and to the right.
Hey, how are you? You've held the rights to the Giver for 20 years. Why do you like the Giver so much, and when is it going to be a movie?
You read the book?
Yeah.
God, I just love that book, man. It's like a beautiful poem, and it was. And what really inspired me to get involved in the book in the first place, I saw that cover, that old guy on the cover, and I said, at the time I was thinking of directing my father in something. So I said, oh, this is something my dad could read. And I think I read a good review, do it as a movie. And I read a good review of the book, and so I jumped into it, and I just loved the book. And for many, many years, that was the plan, that I would direct my father in The Giver. And somewhere we actually have a home movie where I directed all members of our family in The Giver. You know, my dad playing The Giver, and I think one of my nephews played Jonas. And then my father passed away, and I started looking like the old guy on the cover. I said, oh, well, maybe. We've had the rights, lost the rights. Now we've got them again, and we have a director, Philip Noyce, is involved, and it looks like it's going. But it's such a moving story. I don't really want to take too much time given the plot, but I hope that answers your question.
Another question.
Another question in the same section.
Hi, Mr. Bridges. One of your most intriguing movies for me was Fearless. Mm. Wanted to know if making that movie awakened any thoughts that you might not have had about the concept of immortality and what to do with one's life. It affected me in quite a profound manner. Mm. But I was wondering if you had any thoughts on that.
Just as you're asking the question, I'm just thinking of that last scene and the music, that beautiful music. Anybody know who composed that music? Great. Who's that guy again?
Boris Jarre.
Yeah, just, no, it wasn't Boris Jarre. Thank you, Neil. Yeah, that's who it was. And God, it's like it never resolves. It just opens and opens and opens, and that's such a, it feels so lifelike, you know, that opening. And Peter Weir was one of my favorite directors to work with. He was so great and so inclusive. You know, he said, "We're going to fly this plane together, man. I want you to give everything you've got and encourage that kind of participation." It was so wonderful. He knew about movies, this great thing when you're working with a group of people, how wonderful it is, and how exciting and literally wild. You don't know what's going to happen, but when you start empowering people to do something, you know, let's work on this together, we're going to do this, you know, come on, let's see how great we can make this. And you start getting ideas from all of these other brains, you know. It's just so damn exciting, and it gets into the, you know, that theme of oneness and interconnectedness that Buddhism talks about, and it's really an experiencing of that, and exercising and seeing it manifest. It's just very, very exciting. And as far as about immortality, affect me that way. I don't remember really. Just another thing came to mind I'll just share. On that last scene, you know, where I eat the strawberry, and before he was kind of immune to it, and now he's starting to, you know, feel his mortality again, and he eats that strawberry, and he's reacting, and he's dying. And Peter said to me that day, he says, "I'm going to torture you now." I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "We are going to do this scene over and over and over and over and over." And that's what it was, and it's a big boom shot where it's like high like this, and it's, you know, that emotion of the thing would slowly come down like that, twisting, about, you know, about twice that long, and then it was, okay, reset, okay, and it was like on, and like, you know, his idea was he wanted to just strip away all concepts of, you know, all the stuff I worked out in my room to do and all that, and just, you know, well, he probably used the first take, I don't even know.
After all of this time spent theorizing and discussing, I'm wondering sort of where this has impacted your practice and sort of where these discussions have touched the ground.
What do you mean by touch the ground?
In terms of both of your involvement with sort of political and also with Buddhist practice, sort of where these things, where they sort of have manifested in your lives or in sort of how you approach these specific causes?
Well, it's kind of what I was saying before, you know, from my perspective, this thing about the wonder of being involved in making a movie is just a wonderful thing, and all the social action is basically that. Like, we're here in this room making, you know, the movie of life together, or we're all in this together, and to carry that same excitement that you have when making a movie and just carry it into your other work, you know, the work that's real, you know, is a thrilling and a very, you know, possible thing, and you can, you know, see the results of doing that. How about you, Bert?
Well, the expression of where do you put your feet on the ground, it seems like already we've lost the game. That the point of Zen, as I know, or at least in my opinion, because one of the things I certainly feel is that everything I say, or this cat says, or any of us say, is just our opinions. That, in my opinion, the whole thing is learning to live this moment and express who you are. If I have to stop and think about how am I going to bring what to what I'm doing, already I've made a separation, you know? I'm not just being fully me. And I don't care what it is, whether it's making love, having a baby, gardening, reading a book, sitting, meditation. If you can just fully put yourself into it, that's the whole thing. Now, can you not fully put yourself into it? What does that mean? I remember many times when I give talks, there'd always be questions, because you mentioned Ram Dass in the beginning, a lot of people know his book, Being Here Now, and they feel that they've got to do this kind of practice in order to learn how to be here now, and that they aren't being here now. And so they would ask me, how do you be here now, you know? And I would say, well, everybody in the room who isn't here now, please stand up. So, yeah, we pose a lot of funny questions to ourselves, which in and of themselves can't be answered.
Gentlemen, we have time for one-word answer question.
First of all, thank you very much for all three of you being here tonight. The one question I have is, what was the missing chapter that you would have written if you didn't write for this book?
The missing chapter? Maybe it would be, just as you say that, I say, it's like the missing chapter would be the title. And there would be nothing on the page. What would be yours, Bern?
Well, wait for the sequel. That will have all the missing chapters.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Barnes & Noble, I'd like to thank everyone tonight. Jeff Bridges, Bernie Glassman, Jane Jeanine, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeff.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to write the next chapter of this evening for the book signing.